Welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. I'm your host, Wendy Whitaker-Large, and I'm here to help you create a profitable HMO portfolio. Whether you're a brand new investor or you've been at it for a number of years, my podcast is here to help you make the most from your business, whether that is starting up, scaling, or systemizing. Please hit the subscribe button to make sure you never miss an episode. And if you've got an awe-inspiring project, an inspirational investing story, or a unique approach to HMOs, I'd love to hear from you. Welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. I'm really, really delighted today to have a fellow HMO investor on the podcast. It is always great for me to interview somebody who's actually doing it, who's actually investing in HMOs. It's not just that they used to do it and they're now living off the fat of the land, but they're actually doing this day by day. This is their business. So my guest today has been investing for a little while. He's going to tell you a bit more about his background, how he started and where he's got to in his business. But he's got a fantastic brand. And that's one of the things that I want to cover with him today. So my guest today is Tom Charrier, and he is the director of FAT Properties, which, by the way, is nothing like him. And he will explain to you why he is FAT Properties, because he is very lean. In fact, he's training for a marathon right now. So there's fat does not describe him. But not only is he an investor, he is a husband, a father. He's also a podcaster, and he's also an author. So, Tom, really big welcome to you to join me in the podcast today.
Thank you, Wendy. Absolute pleasure to be here. That's a fairly impressive introduction. I hope I can live up to it.
I'm sure you can. Now, Tom, in this podcast, we start with a round of quick fire questions to really get you going and put you on your toes. So I've got five questions to ask you today. And I think that these questions are going to test you. And the rules are these: you can only answer yes or no, or have a single word. If you really cannot stick to those rules, we do allow you to have a short sentence. But I'm sure we will delve into these topics more today as we discuss them.
Cool.
So are you ready, Tom, for your quick fire round?
Let's go.
Do you think there is a north-south divide in the UK when it comes to property investing?
Yes.
Why?
I think the history of property values and people's perception around them. I think the reality is changing, but people's perceptions have a big lag to them.
And I will allow you a slightly longer answer to that one. Because
I was going to say, yeah, that's more than a one-word answer.
It is. You're allowed that. That was a supplementary, so that doesn't count. That's
yeah, okay. Okay, good. I was answering it as shortly as I could.
Question number two. Should you turn down a deal even if you're not likely to get all your money out?
No.
What proportion of your projects have you got all your money out of?
One. Sorry, let me clarify that. Initial refinance, just one.
What is the biggest factor in creating great HMOs?
Great design.
What do you think? Sorry. No, that's great. We'll allow that.
I could expand. I'm holding my tongue. I'm sure we'll get onto that.
I'm sure we will.
Enormous topic.
Question number five. What do you think is the reason that holds people back from investing in HMOs?
Oh, good question. Again, I would probably say, if I was limited to one word, perception stroke negative stories.
Amazing. Listen, you didn't have any idea what those questions were.
I didn't know what they were going to be. When you asked one word, answer with one word, that's a tough challenge.
It is, and I really put you on the spot there. So well done. Brilliant. Yeah,
there's obviously so much nuance to all of this and so much background.
Absolutely. So, Tom, I would love you to describe your background to us, describe to us where you started with HMOs, how you got going, and where you invest. Tell us some of the details about where you're investing and how it's working for you. We'd love to know a bit more about your background, please.
Sure, yeah. So I'm talking about myself and my wife, Philippa, who is very much, co-founder, the other director, and we're a partnership. We both have a background professionally in the design professions. My wife trained as an architect and moved into urban design. I was a landscape architect, moved into kind of urban design and planning. So we'd always been, you know, we'd been educated and then worked professionally in kind of urban regeneration, big residential schemes, big projects, where the thinking and the question was always, how do we make better places for people to live? How do we create environments where they can lead better, healthier, more productive lives? Now, of course, that was always at a big scale, you know, city, you know, region, city centres, master plans, big regeneration plans. But that's was our kind of professional background. And then we'd always had a bit of an entrepreneurial drive. We wanted to do our own thing. About, how long ago was it? 10 and a half, 11 years ago. In fact, it was when our son was born. We wanted to get into property investment, kind of branch out on our own. And we had a look around.
And was that because you saw that there was an opportunity to increase your income? Was it because you felt that you had lots of skills that were being used to make money for other people? Or was there some other reason? What spurred you on to start doing it for yourselves?
It was really, it was about, it was kind of all of those things. And also just a real drive. We'd messed around with various different business ideas. We wanted to work for ourselves. We wanted to have that, you know, control over our lives and freedom and be kind of masters of our own fate and build something as well. You know, we were designers and we're building, not literally building things, but, you know, building projects, building schemes. And it's like, well, we want to, you know, it's the same kind of thinking, that design problem solving process to our own gig. And we started looking around and we looked at some student properties, some student HMOs, and we're just shocked, frankly, that nothing had moved on in the years, many years, since we had been at university. You know, Philippa studied in Leeds at Edinburgh. I also studied in Leeds, although at a slightly different time to her. Lived in some real dives, you know, both of us did. I'm sure
that must have been quite a shock then when you went back to see some of these properties or properties that you probably thought would have moved on quite a bit since you had been a student, only to go in and think, do you know what? This kind of brings back very prescient memories of what it was like when we lived in student HMOs. That must have been quite a kind of wake up call in a way.
100%. And what was also, there was that, but there was also this kind of real sinking feeling, this disappointment and this kind of concern of like, oh my God, this hasn't moved on. Well, we've got young kids, you know, they're not about to go off to university, but they will be in a blink of an eye. And where is it going to be like this when they go off to uni? You know, that it was a real shock. And, you know, I mean, Philippa certainly felt that. I felt that. Just a real, shock, disappointment that things had not moved on. And goodness me, you know, something needs to change. And we kind of thought, hang on a second. You know, we've been creating better places for people to live all our lives, yes, at a bigger scale. But actually now we can take that down to, you know, the literal bricks and mortar scale and start to make a bit of a difference in our own little way, in our own little place. So we invested in a student HMO. Now, this was when, like I say, I think we picked up the keys maybe like the day before Philippa went into labor with our son, who was child number two. So initially what we did was we just handed the keys over to a managing agent and just said, there's the keys, you know, we have not got the, you know, I was still working full time. She was obviously literally about to go into maternity like the next day. this guy, he actually ended up on BBC Rogue Traders, you know, camera chasing him down the road. He screwed over hundreds of people. He stole hundreds of thousands of pounds.
This is the managing agent.
Is the managing agent. Yeah. he owed us several thousand pounds. We managed to get our money back just before he went bust. It could have been a bigger disaster, but that was certainly felt like a disaster at the time. And we just said, well, this is just, you know, this guy's absolutely dreadful. So we said, right, well, you know, we'll manage it. So, you know, we began doing that. And, you know, we realized that, look, if you, you know, manage well, treat people well, you know, provide a good service, provide a great customer service, then, you know, your tenants are happy and, you know, they're more likely to stay longer and all the things that we look again, you know it, we know it. I'm sure everybody listening to this podcast, we're on the same wavelength because they're doing, they're listening to this podcast and listening to other things and everyone's kind of, you know, on the same page, but it really kind of drove that home. And yeah, that became the process. We, you know, we kind of did that one up a bit and, you know, a while later we refinanced and we're moving reasonably slowly at first, you know, kind of gently. And then an interesting project. We bought a HMO. It was actually an operational HMO. And it was a horrendous state that I remember talking to someone and he said, oh yeah, I used to be a policeman around here. I've had my boot through that front door many times looking for people.
No. And, you're already infamous, or your property was already infamous.
Yeah, seriously. And, you know, this guy was a retiring landlord. The place was just horrendous. You can't believe humans were living in there. I mean, it was really, really appalling, you know. Anyway, we you know, planned this big refurb. And we actually had the choice. It was big enough. It had six bedrooms. And the place is really big. And it had a space to go for seven. And actually, we decided, this has nothing to do with kind of, you know, needing planning permission to go to seven bedrooms or anything, but we thought, you know what, we're going to keep it a six and really big social space, really big lounge, great big dining room, not a lovely kitchen, all open plan. It's fantastic. We said, we're not going to, you know, chase the revenue of the seventh bedroom. We're just going to make this absolutely tip-top quality. Really went all out, you know, design-wise. And that doesn't mean, you know, spending buckets and buckets of money. I mean, look, it was a big project and it cost a lot. But it wasn't spending money for spending money's sake. It was about getting the fundamentals right of the design, making sure there's enough space, making sure the layout works, providing everything that everybody needs.
And do you know what? I think that's really key. Actually, I'm just going to
pause you there,
Tom, because I think that you having a design background, you can see how a space can be used effectively and efficiently, which I think for many HMO landlords basically means they just want to put more rooms into a house. And I've seen many, many HMOs where, you know, somebody has absolutely maximized the space, but the rooms are not very big. They are very much a bit like sardines in a tin. And the problem is that people are not going to stay there very long because they don't have space to grow. They don't have space to store things. It hasn't been well thought out. And certainly in some of my HMO developments, you know, we've had some hard decisions to make. Do we maximize or do we just make each room much, much better and have a bigger kitchen diner, for example, or have more social space? And these are hard questions to answer. And I think every project you have to evaluate on its own terms to a large degree, because it's about being clever with your finances. And as you say, it doesn't necessarily need to cost a lot more money. It's more about having an eye at being creative about how you can make the money that you have got work for you. And that seems to me that that's one of the skills that you brought to your business. And Philippa.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that's probably right. It's, you know, and it's wonderful to hear you say that because it is, I mean, you're right. Every project needs to be assessed on its own, you know, on its own merits. Ultimately, they've got to stack up, you know, of course. There's no point doing it if the thing's going to fall down economically, because then nobody gets anywhere to live and, you know, you end up going under. So that's no good. But yeah, we could have gone for the seventh bedroom. We didn't. We really focused on making this a six, really as, you know, as high quality as we could. And, you know, what you just described played out, or rather the opposite, which was, you know, people stay a really long time, you know, they absolutely love it, you know, they're happy to pay, you know, good rents for it. And it really was just the kind of, you know, the confirmation of, I suppose, what we'd thought and we hadn't tested yet, which was, look, just, you know, don't design by spreadsheet, you know, design, you know, the spreadsheet's got to work, but primarily, you know, we're creating homes for people. That's what we're doing.
Yeah. Whereabouts is it that you're investing, Tom? Because you know my first question to you about the North-South divide. Well, yes. I want to move on to that. So tell me, where are you investing?
So we invest in Lancaster, which is in the northwest. It's a university city. In fact, it's kind of top 10, you know, university. It's pretty well renowned. It's a small city, you know, it's certainly not Manchester or Leeds or anything like that, but it's got a big regional hospital, you know, great train links and, you know, motorway links, things like that. So in fact, it's got two universities. It's got the University of Cumbria as well, although Lancaster is the kind of red brick institution. So it's a great location, it's a great investment location because the property prices, you know, are not what they are in some other parts of the country. Of course, you know, look, everything's going up, and certainly the challenge now is finding projects that do stack up. But we have, you know, we have a couple of clients that, as we'll kind of get back to kind of that point of the evolution of our kind of business in a second, but who are, you know, they're based in the south. And you know, quite simply, it's, you know, their money goes further and makes a better return for them up in the north. So, you know, that makes sense. So, yeah, you know, after we did that, the project I was just describing, then, and this has kind of all been on our own, I was chatting to, I think it was my brother-in-law initially, just one Christmas, just, you know, chatting away as you do. And I was kind of explaining what we were doing. I was in no means pitching anything. I'd never even thought of pitching anything, you know, ever. We were just chatting. And he said, look, this sounds great. You know, my business is doing pretty well. Can we invest? Can I invest in the next one? And we said, yeah, that's interesting. If there's A, yes, you can. And B, you know, well, if you're thinking that, then I'm sure other people may think that. And so, you know, then other people began to contact us. We had some, you know, basically kind of external investors contacted us. Some of those have ended up as joint venture partners on some bigger projects. Some of them have ended up as clients where we've essentially sourced and developed properties for them. That's very much, I mean, when we do that, we have a very small number of clients. We're reasonably kind of selective about who we work with because we want to work with people who, you know, whose values we align with, who get what we're doing, who like what we're doing, vice versa. You know, we're all on the same page. And yeah, you know, it grew from there.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing, Tom. It's lovely, isn't it, when somebody else can spot the potential and see the vision, maybe even more than you can yourself. And, yeah, you know, I have this sometimes with my mentees that I can see something that they have that they can't see. And it takes an observer, an outside person to go, you know what you're really good at is this, or you know what you've got the potential to do, it's this. And sometimes when you're in it, when you're doing it, you don't kind of take that your head up and go, actually, this is a really great brand that we're creating. This is a really great business. I may only have one HMO, but this HMO typifies who we are and who we want to be. And we just need to find a way of doing a cookie cutter so we can keep doing it. And that means finance. That means funding. That means working with investors. And probably at that time, you weren't even thinking about that. It wasn't really on your radar. You had a young family. You'd done this HMO. It's working well. You might have been thinking, where's the second one coming from? We didn't really know. But you kind of just trusted that by doing it right, something would happen. And hey, bingo, that conversation happened and the next stage took off.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what happened. You know, we weren't out there pitching. We were just, you know, we were just kind of talking. And I think you're right. People are so close to what they do. You know, they don't, like you say, they don't appreciate the kind of the value that they can provide or create, where they're strong, where they're weak. You know, and like you say, it takes someone who's perhaps removed to say, yeah, look, you know, this is great. Let's focus on this. So, yeah, it was a nice vote of confidence. And, you know, we actually still work together. We're doing a project together at the moment. And, yeah, it's
great.
Now,
I must ask you about your brand, though. Coming from a design background, I'd expect you to, you know, have thought through your brand. And again, this is something that I think is really important for people to understand what a brand is, because it's more than a logo, it's more than a color scheme, it's more than design guides or, you know, a brand guidelines. Yes. It's about the whole thing. It's about who you are and what you do. But you have a very particular and very memorable brand. Could you tell us about it, Tom?
We do. We part of our, you know, look, the true essence of what a brand is, I suppose, yes, has been very much thought through, not in terms of thinking about what is our brand. It's really just like, what do we stand for? And what do we want to bring to the industry, to the world, to our customers, to our investors? The other side is, you know, the name Fat Properties was literally the most throwaway thing ever. There was no thought that went into that. we wanted a name that kind of, we were like, well, what are we about? We had these names like, oh, we're big spaces, and oh, okay, well, what goes in a big space? I don't know. And someone kind of threw the name Fat in there, and we were like, it was a bit of a joke. And then it seemed to stick. And then actually, as soon as people kind of, you know, spoke about it or heard it, it just was, it was more memorable than, I don't know, you know, a kind of an acronym based on our initials or something like that. So it kind of stuck, the bright pink. I suppose we did kind of think about that. We just wanted something eye-catching, you know, bright, powerful, energetic. Eye-catching. Again, not, you know, a nice royal blue is a very professional color. Like, of course, we're professional and we want to be professional, but we don't really want to compete in that space because it's very, very crowded. So we just wanted to do something a little bit different. But yeah, in terms of, you know, look, that's just a name, and we could change our name and it would, you know, the name would be different. But ultimately, yeah, our brand is about, you know, it's about well-being. It's about designing spaces. It's about, you know, the experience of being in buildings, in homes. That's really what we love, you know, practicing in terms of design, in terms of delivering projects, in terms of research. You know, we've done stacks of research into how our built environment impacts our, you know, our well-being, our psychology, our health, physical health, mental health. And yeah, I suppose there's all that kind of serious stuff and a bit of fun as well, because at the end of the day, you know, we want to enjoy what we do and have fun.
Yeah, and for your tenants to enjoy the spaces that they're living in.
100%. Well, exactly. You know, that's really the measure. I think that's the measure of the real measure of our success, or how we measure ourselves. You know, everything else is, you know, it's a kind of vanity metric. But when we get great customer feedback, you know, when our tenants, you know, give us Christmas cards or leaving out, you know, presents when they move out, and say thank you to either to us or to our operations manager or anything like that. That's like, okay, that is the measure of success. And that, I mean, look, we might post about it on Instagram, but no one else knows about that. Like, you know, that's not public stuff. That's just nice.
The great thing is you can't get taxed on that, can you?
It's not enough to significantly increase our tax bill, but
exactly. You know, so therefore, nice, it has a value all of its own. Okay, great. So, I mean, I absolutely love that. I think, you know, I think you have created this, you know, this amazing, amazing brand. As you say, it's about the expression of your values, who you are, what you're trying to achieve. It's not just the name. It's not just the logo. It's also about, you know, the business, how you both operate and what you're trying to achieve for your tenants as well, which I think is, you know, really awe-inspiring, Tom. I think it's absolutely fantastic. So let me ask you a little bit about, you know, kind of where you see the industry developing, and where do you want to go in your business? Let's say in 2024, what are your goals and plans for this year?
Two big goals. One of them specifically property related, and one of them more related to, you know, it's certainly part of the brand, but it's not specifically property related. Property stuff is to keep on with the student HMOs, go out to other cities. We actually very nearly went out to Preston with a pretty big development just over 12 months ago, but then the kind of economic climate suddenly changed and that just became less attractive. So we kind of pulled back from that, but we're very much looking at other cities. We recently bought a portfolio of HMOs. Well, it's kind of mixed use. So it had city centre kind of retail at ground floor with HMOs above. And that was a joint venture. And, you know, we've acquired that. We've actually made some kind of design changes. We've made some much nicer homes for people to live in. We've added value. And you think, well, that's, you know, that's a much more You know, it's a quick way to scale and grow, isn't it? Instead of doing one at a time, we've done four at a time. So now we're still looking at individual projects and individual HMOs very much so, but we're also looking at portfolios and saying, okay, you know, can we scale up, you know, quicker and have more impact and ultimately deliver more, you know, great homes for students to live in by developing portfolios. So we're very much on the hunt for those. I think this, in terms of where the market's going, I think there's going to be a lot of property and a lot of HMOs kind of coming up for sale in 2024. And shortly afterwards, I think a lot of baby boomer, well, not I think, there are a lot of kind of baby boomer property investors, landlords retiring now. You know, they're about, you know, they're kind of pushing 80 years old now. And what we're seeing is they've had a from a regulation and, you know, how much work they've had to do point of view, they've had a pretty easy ride. You know, it was kind of the Wild West, you know, a few decades ago. And a lot of them seem to be selling up. I think the renters reform bill is probably going to be the kind of the straw that broke the camel's back for a lot of them. And they're just going to say, look, you know what, I've kind of had enough. Like I say, we're certainly seeing quite a few of those come to market now. So that's a kind of an exciting avenue for us to explore.
Yeah, it's a good opportunity, isn't it? Because as you say, you're almost buying in bulk. You're a wholesale buyer, longer a retailer, and you can do significant transactional. There's significant transactional advantages to that, not just from a purchase point of view, but also things like stamp duty, where you can get multiple property relief. Exactly. But also there's a negotiating strength that you have when you're negotiating on a portfolio. So that's a really exciting development, and that's going to be great. I love that. One of the things that we did touch on very, very early on in your quickfire round, Tom, was about finance. So you've spoken about how you first started to raise investor finance, and it was just by dropping it in conversation. And I think that is a really great way to get started. It's not scary, and you weren't even intending to raise. You weren't trying to pitch, as you say, but it just happened. So I think that people who are listening, who may be thinking, oh, I need to start raising investor finance, you know, it's lovely to hear that it's possible to do it really from a kind of almost a subconscious level, that you just start to tell people what you're doing and who you are, and some people will be attracted to what you're doing. And as you say, there will be people who've got money set aside in their business. They're too busy to invest in property. It's not giving them much of a return. It's sitting in their company reserve account or current account, and they're thinking, there's quite a lot of money in there and I need to use it somehow. And I kind of want to divest some of my finances, maybe into something that's got a different risk profile. Maybe it's a longer term asset. Mm-hmm. What can I do with it? And they are looking for people like you, Tom. So that's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. No, they certainly are. They certainly are. You know, there's a huge amount of capital out there that is looking for a home. And I mean, look, in terms of going out and finding it, I have to say, we'd probably be the last people to speak to literally on going out and finding it, because actually it's always found us. We have been, you know, obviously we've done pitches when people have, you know, approached us, but we've never cold called anybody. We've never actually gone out and looked for it. People have always come to us and said, hey, we found you here, or we found you there. Let's have a chat. Let's have a conversation. Can we work together, et cetera? So that's brilliant. I think probably where, you know, one of the places where we have been quite strong is in that articulation of our values on what we're all about and what we're not about as well. And I think as long as people have heard that, the right people have connected with it. Now, I've got absolutely no doubt whatsoever that lots of people have said, oh, I'm not into that at all, you know, or you know, that's great, good on them, but actually my focus, my interest is over here. That's absolutely fine. You know, to be blunt, there's no point either of us wasting our time with each other if we're not going to end up on the same page. But, you know, when people have heard it and it has clicked with them, that's been excellent, because we're like, oh, okay, right, we know we're broadly speaking on the same page. Let's see if we can make this work, and let's explore it further. So I think that's probably one area where we have, you know, have been reasonably strong. You know, certainly, you know, it's Philippa massively as well, obviously.
What about when it comes to the refinance, though? So yeah, you touched on this earlier on, that, you know, obviously for lots of projects, and we've had this as well, you don't get your money out first time round on the refinance. How have you handled that, and how do you handle that with your investors?
That's a good point. So our, actually, you know what? When I said all money out on one, that wasn't true. All money out on initial refinance twice, because yes, the first time was with a private investor who'd made a loan to us. We've actually only ever, we've done a loan twice. One of the ones, not quite all the money came out, but that was our money that was left in. And obviously our investor got all his money back. And the other one, the money came out, investor gets repaid plus interest, obviously. That's the only time we've done loans. Everything else has either been joint venture arrangements, or like I say, we've got a number of clients where we've, you know, and actually some of their projects have got close to that. I think kind of in terms of the refinance, I don't think people chasing, I think people again get too fixated, and I don't know if this comes from, you know, again, social media, or, you know, these wonderful tales, you know, of like, wow, all your money out, and, you know, these unicorn deals and stuff. Look, I think people just get too fixated on that. You know, our approach is this. This is a long-term investment. Yeah. We are investing for, you know, it's like people kind of obsessing of day to day. Oh, the property market's gone up 2% or down this. And it's like, this only matters if you're trading. If you're doing day to day, this is relevant.
Yes.
If you're making a long-term investment, it's got no bearing on anything whatsoever. Like, why are people so worried about it? You know, our view is this is a long-term investment measured in decades, and it's going to go up, it's going to go down. The long-term trend, you know, I'm reasonably confident, is going to be up. And it's really as simple as that. So if we don't get all our money out on a refinance, that's fine. There's the more the better, although the flip side is obviously then the mortgage is higher.
Yes, exactly.
So, you know, cash flow reduces. We wouldn't want to go too high. We don't want to, you know, a crazy high valuation that kind of feels a bit unrealistic. You know, again, we want to be safe. We want to be sustainable. We want to kind of manage our risk. And yeah, typically, you know, we'll refinance, we'll leave in, a good chunk of money. And, you know, in the future, if we want to refinance that out once, you know, there's been some capital growth, fine, we can. Or if not, we'll just leave it there. And that's, you know, of course, it will look, when you're starting out, you probably want as much out as possible so you can recycle it. But again, I think there's a danger. And you know, back to your question earlier of why do you think people fail to get started? Again, I think people get a bit too fixated on, oh, this has got to be the perfect deal. You know, oh, it's not all money out. It's not this, it's not that. Oh, just get started. Just get stuck in. You know, how many investment books about the stock market have people read, or tips have people read? You know, it's not time in the market, it's time in the market, time in the market. Well, the same applies. It's the same thing. But I think we all get a bit too, concerned about, you know, is this perfect? Is it this mega deal? Oh, just get stuck in, you know, make an investment.
The other thing is, I think the length of time it often takes to do a conversion may well be anything from 4 to 9 months. Mm-hmm. And in that time, as we know, the market can change considerably. Yep. You may have started, and not only that, but actually the time for conveyancing. If you're buying a property to turn into an HMO, it can take 5 months to actually complete the transaction. So you agree the price, let's say in September, you pick up the keys in, let's say, March. You've had 6 months of extra capital growth inbuilt into that before you've even got the keys, but the price was secured in September, and there could have been fairly significant changes in the market, up or down, in that time.
Yep.
Because of the time that conveyancing takes. Then you add on the cost of the time of the refurb. It might be a whole year from when you've made that offer through to actually having your rooms tenanted and filled and the HMO operational up and running. 1 year in property, although it's not a long time in the life cycle of a property, it's reasonably long time in terms of the investment cycle. And actually, by then, you can already be making money because you've locked in significant value and because of what you've done. And so I agree with you, Tom, that sometimes people are held back by their own fear.
Yes.
They want it to be perfect. They can't see what the future looks like. And so they are trying in all ways possible to avoid any risk But unfortunately, it is absolutely laid risk with risk investing in property. You can't help it. And HMO is another scale up. But equally, I think that the rewards are there if you're prepared to, you know, put the work in, put the time in, put the effort in. And as you've done, do your research. Do your research on the area, on the market, on the type of HMO you want to create, the type of business you want to be. The rewards are there. But yeah, there are times when it is nail biting.
There are. And I have to say, you know, going from full-time employment to, you know, running our own business, there have been some sleepless nights, you know. Believe me, I sleep like a log, you know, 99 out of 100. I'm not one to kind of complain about bad sleep, but there have been stressful times. And it usually is related to, you know, money and finance and projects and like, oh my God, you know, is this kind of thing going to stay on the tracks? But the fear is always far worse than the reality. It always comes good. So.
Well, it's great to hear you say that, because that is the reality. And you know, many people get started in HMOs and do have sleepless nights. And I think that is part of most people's experience at some point. It's not perfect. It's not always easy, but you get through it. And I think with the right mindset and the right attitude, you learn, you grow, and you move on. And a few years down the track, you think, do you know what? Why did I ever worry about that particular problem? Now I've got a much bigger problem to worry about. That was minor.
Right. Oh God, don't say that. You're stressing me out now.
But Tom, alongside raising a young family, developing an HMO portfolio, managing your portfolio and your properties, and developing a great brand, you've also written a book. Tell us a little bit about your book. I'm fascinated to learn about this book that you've written.
We have. So, goodness me, I'm going to fully blame Philippa for this. She had the idea. Oh, I can't remember when it was. I think it was some point early COVID, maybe something like that. Again, we've always been about design and how design and built environment specifically impacts people, impacts their well-being. And I think there was a lot of things that people kind of intuitively felt about that, but not much actual hard physical research, or certainly nothing that we'd really come across. So I suppose what we wanted to do as well was to kind of say, look, student world, student developers, student landlords, you know, we are not engaged. You know, the primary objective is this. Of course, you're making a financial investment. But the primary objective is not kind of spreadsheet management. The primary objective is making homes for people to live in. Yeah, and homes haven't. We spend, I think, 90% of our time, over 90% of our time in buildings in Western Europe, 65% of our time in our homes. Yeah. So for a student on a 3-year degree, that's 2 years spent inside their home. It's massive. They have a huge
long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you kind of think about it like that, oh my God. So have a huge, huge impact on our, you know, physical well-being, mental well-being, you know, our health, our social relationships, all these things. So Philippa decided that we should write a book. It's basically a design guide. To kind of creating student homes that enhance well-being. So it's if you're only listening, you can't see.
Yeah, them. Wonderful. We'll put the link in the podcast notes. So everyone. So what's it called, and where can we buy it?
It's called Design for Wellbeing. You can buy it on Amazon. There's probably a link to it on our website. Yeah, we can pop it in the show notes. It was never a kind of revenue generating exercise for us. All our profits go to Student Minds, actually, which is the kind of student mental health charity. And fundamentally, it's a design guide to help people create student HMOs, although really the principles apply to any HMO and probably any home, although the niche is student HMO. How to help them design homes, that create happier, healthier students, you know, that it kind of starts with, you know, why is it important? You know, what is well-being? Why is it important? Do students even care about well-being? You know, people, students, they don't care about any of that stuff. It's like, yeah, okay, sure. You know, that's the kind of fun blasé, like, oh, they don't care. But actually, if you say, look, do you want to be more productive? You know, do you want to be able to focus for longer periods of time and study more effectively? Do you want to have better relationships? Do you want to have a healthier lifestyle? Do you want to sleep better and have more restorative rest? Well, the answer is yes. It's yes to all of those things. Is that right? Well, then you are interested in better well-being, and your home is fundamental to all those things. So, yeah, that's ultimately that's what it is. And
very, very exciting. Well, I know a lot of people will be wanting to get that book, particularly if they're investing in student HMOs, you know. And I thought you were going to say, well, it's really all about how to install more beer fridges, or you know, how to have a party area, or you know, how to sound insulate your HMO so that when they have these midnight raves, the names
well, sound insulation. Yeah, so I mean, all those things are important. You know, all those things are important. Like, listen, it's important to be able to party and have a good time, but you know, the flip side, it's important to be able to rest and sleep well, and you know, in a well sound insulated location. It's important to study well. You know, I mean, there's research. It was really interesting, actually. What we wanted it to be was really kind of research and data backed. This is not kind of ooh wishy washy stuff. This is like no. We've found all these kind of scientific research studies, all about how the environment affects people, and that's what it's based on. It's you know, just some kind of fascinating, you know, stats and you know information in there that hopefully is helpful to people. And actually, yeah. Philip's currently writing a second book, which is pretty fresh, and I don't, to be honest, right now have a well articulated kind of pitch to kind of put out there for it. But it's less about the built environment, and it's really all about how young people, students in particular, can just get the most from themselves from a kind of holistic health and kind of well-being point of view. And again, you know, do you want to, you know, avoid issues and health problems and mental health problems? Yes. Do you want to do better? Do you want to get better grades? Do you want to kind of thrive? Yes. Well, cool. You know, so that was the other, when you were talking about what your big goals, there's the property goal. And then this other goal is the kind of pursuit of that, which again is just, I think it all, you know, the reason Fat Properties was born was like, oh my goodness me, when our kids go off to uni, we want there to be somewhere that's good for them to live in. You know, and that grew into, well, actually we could do this for more than our kids. We could do this for lots of people. And that grew. And now it's like, well, actually, you know, where your home live is fundamental. Sorry, where you live is fundamental to your well-being, but there's lots of other aspects as well. And it's this, you know, this kind of information is like, look, we need to get it out there. So.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing. Well, you know, if your children do go to university, I'm sure by the time they get
won't
there.
Have to all this.
Well, exactly. You see, this is the thing, Tom. You will have inspired them so much to you know, be the rich dad rather than the poor dad. They'll probably say, "Dad, why on earth am I going to uni? I can just be like you, invest in property." And you're thinking, "We only did this because of you."
Well, you know what? I look at, we've got lots of nephews and nieces, and, you know, one of them, you know, brother and sister, one's gone off to uni, had a fantastic time, obviously racked up loads of debt. The other one, apprenticeship straight out of school, and he's absolutely flying. And you think,
absolutely. Exactly.
But you know, look, at the end of the day.
But anyway, if they do decide.
Higher education is supremely important, so.
You've definitely set the bar there, and even if they don't live in one of your HMOs, they can certainly share your book with their landlord, and who might take some interest in it. And
funny, a lot of family friends actually will contact us and say, "Oh my goodness me, my son's landlord is doing this. What do you advise?" And we're like, "They're doing what? Like, oh my god,
buy our book." Well, listen, Tom, it's been absolutely a pleasure to have you on today. It's been so interesting listening to your journey, your progress, the development of your business and where it comes from. You know, it came from this desire to create something better for your children, for the next generation. And you're putting that into practice. And I think it's really exciting. It's also a thriving business. And, you know, you branched out into lots of different areas. So long may it continue. Your takeover of the student market in Lancashire. Nationwide, absolutely. I'm looking forward to Fat Properties being even fatter by the end of the year.
That's the goal.
That's it, fit and fatter.
I like it. Yeah, damn, I should have thought of that. I'm going to use that
one. we will be delighted to share your information on the podcast notes and also on the video, so people can contact you if they're interested. They may want to know more or buy your book. And we just look forward to keeping track of your progress over the next few months and years. It's absolutely fantastic. And thank you so much for being on today. Really appreciate it.
Brilliant. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure, Wendy. I've really enjoyed it. It's been a wonderful conversation. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you for listening to the HMO Success Podcast. If you'd like to know more about how you can create a profitable HMO business, please visit our website, hmosuccess.co.uk, to find out more. We have plenty of free tools and information for you there, and also on our Facebook group, The Ultimate HMO Success System. We look forward to connecting with you very soon. Thanks for listening.